It's the official Fantasy Premier League podcast from the Premier League. Game week 10 is heading our way. If you've been seeing more red arrows than Farnborough, we may have the solutions for you. And some unusual ones as well, as we ask today, Watford, why not? All that coming up in today's show. Hello, Fantasy Manager, and welcome to the show. And a little bit of solace, because I bet you've had a rough week. You're not alone. Here with you is Sam Parkin, who plays an active part in TalkSport's game day coverage of the Premier League. Hello, Sam.
Hi, James.
Lovely to have you on board for the first time this season. Returning is Tom Williams of ESPN and Bleacher Report.
Hello, James.
Tom, looking quite happy with your week's progress.
More green arrows than reds of late, so yeah, nice. quietly ticking away.
Of course, it all depends where you start. And Jeff Dancin of FPL Scout.
Hi, James. Happy to be here.
Bringing some expert views to this conversation.
Yeah.
Great news. Sam, it's really exciting to have you here because we've been watching your progress for a while. I remember back in game week two, you were in the top 2,000 managers in the entire world. Wow, what did that feel like?
It was amazing. It's been a long time coming. I think 6 or 7 years in the making, but finally I was getting the rewards for my hard work.
Did you start to dream of that gift pack and all that stuff?
I was thinking of the carving going into the trophy already. Wow. And I was wanting to get it done. I got carried away. Yeah. I was wanting to get it done, get that cushion in September, October. Never going to happen, and it's reality has struck.
You were in early on Teemu Pukki, which is why you were doing so well at the start.
Yeah, that was a good call. And I felt after he'd scored at Anfield, they were playing Newcastle at home. I knew they'd probably win the game and I knew he'd probably score, but I didn't envisage him doing what he did. But it was amazing because I really got an incredible start away from the rest.
Among the other things you didn't envisage was the fact that Harry Kane would really let you down in game week three when you triple captained Kane. And since then, Sam, it's been downhill all the way. More pukey than pukey.
I was egged on by a friend who actually triple captained Kane the same day. So
I know who that friend is.
Yeah, you do know who that friend was. And believe it or not, I was at the Tottenham Watford game on Saturday and I captained Harry Kane again. And I just felt that there may be something, you know, some subliminal messages I could send him from the new Tottenham Hotspur Stadium to make him actually pull his finger out.
Best of luck with
that.
Happen. Although, midweek, of course, much better showing from Spurs. Will that seep through into their Premier League performances? We'll talk about the fixtures later on. But, you know, you're not alone in having problems in the returns from the popular players. Sam Goose writing in and saying, why has this season been so much harder? Because have a look at, for example, this week's Dream Team, this after game week 9. Every player in there, bar David Silva, is a differential. All under 10% ownership. All the popular picks, all the players that we normally trust to perform are not delivering, Jeff.
Yeah, and I look at my team, and I thought I was great. On paper, it looked like a very strong side, but I have three players in my whole team who are differentials. And when those big players don't perform, then I struggle. So I had 30 points this week, not nearly where I want to be. But I think it's difficult to decide who to captain because the returns are coming all over the place, and it is differentials who are usually running people's game weeks.
It's a really good thing that we have a special section called Essential Differential, which is packed with very interesting picks coming up later on in the podcast. Tom, was there a player or was there a lesson that you drew from game week 9, somebody you thought, hang on, I need to get on this guy?
Well, like a lot of people, and as Jeff was saying, all my big picks disappointed. Mo Salah didn't play, De Bruyne, Raheem Sterling, okay, got an assist. Captain Tabby Abraham didn't deliver. And so I was actually rescued by my defensive differentials. Tomori, Diego Rico and John Lundstrom got 19 points. And that hoisted me up to 43 points, which ordinarily you'd be pretty disappointed by. But I think given how badly pretty much everyone did last week, it didn't feel like that bad a score.
How excited are you by the re-emergence of Marcus Alonso at Chelsea? And is that something you'd find interesting? Cracking goal for him last week.
Yes, it was. I've had Alonso in fantasy teams in past seasons, and obviously we know what a twin threat he represents, both in terms of defensive points and attacking points from set pieces. My only worry with Alonso is I'm not sure whether he has overcome the challenge that Emerson presents in terms of who starts at left back for Chelsea. So I think I'd like to see Alonso holding down a first team place for a little while longer before I go for him. But certainly from a fantasy perspective, he's in a decent bit of form at the moment.
And Alonso was someone I was looking at for a while, but I have the same fears. I'm not sure if he's going to have the spot long term, and he's a little bit too expensive for me to spend on someone who might not get starts. So for me, Tomori was the answer there. Much cheaper, still a differential at 6.5% ownership. He's the way I went instead of Alonso.
Tomori belongs to you, Jeff. All right. Big game coming up for Chelsea away at Burnley. We'll talk about the Game Week 10 fixtures next. Game Week 10, and it's an early deadline, everybody, which means best get the team sorted as soon as you finish listening to this podcast, because chances are Friday will happen to you and you won't remember about it until after the 7 o'clock UK time deadline has passed. Tom, it's Saints-Leicester that are kicking off 8 o'clock on Friday, and that's a game you think there could be some fantasy action in.
Yes, we'll start with Southampton. I think Danny Ings is someone who's been in good form of late. 3 goals in 3 games, only 2.4% ownership, so a strong differential.
Because we've got a tweet here from Daniel Dylan Malone who says, is anyone on the panel looking at Ings? And if not, why not?
I looked at him briefly for the reasons that I've just mentioned, but if you look at Southampton's fixtures, Leicester at home, Man City away, Everton at home, Arsenal away, not the most positive run of games. He's about the only Southampton player in any kind of form, so I wouldn't bet against him to score against Leicester when he's in this form.
But you wouldn't bet on him?
But not necessarily bet on him.
3 in 3, though, that's convincing. Or do you think that it's kind of circumstantial the way he's come to that? Sam, you know about scoring goals. What do you think? Do you trust in Ings to continue that run?
No, probably not, to be completely frank. Right. I think he's in a great, rich vein of form, but no, I don't see Southampton. I thought it was always a bit of a problem with the manager when he first went in. I don't see a great deal of creativity. I know Redmond's been a bit better for them, but I think that's why they fall down when you compare them to some of the other teams in that area of the division.
Right. What about Leicester players then, Tom?
Yeah, I mean, looking at Leicester, I mean, the thing that really stands out with them is the fixtures they've got coming up. Southampton away, Crystal Palace away, Arsenal at home, Brighton away, Everton home, Watford home, Aston Villa away, Norwich home. A really decent run of fixtures. Jamie Vardy's an obvious pick, also in good form. 3 goals in his last 3 games. Other picks, Ricardo Pereira is a very strong defensive pick. 2 goals this season, second highest scoring defender. Chaglos Soyuncu, only 4.7 million, so a decent budget pick. I think the most interesting...
And does Leicester... he return, Soyuncu? Because we've been saying him for a week or two now.
I think the only issue with Leicester is that they don't keep that many clean sheets. I think they've only kept maybe a couple this season. But, you know, given Soyuncu's price, 4.7 million, that's a decent price for a player who's currently playing at what looked like a top six team in waiting. I think if you're going to pick out anyone from that Leicester team, Harvey Barnes, only 0.4% ownership. 5.9 million, so not the cheapest midfielder, but coming off an 11-point haul against Burnley last weekend, and he started the last 4 games, so looks like a pretty nailed-on starter, playing in an attacking position in quite an attacking team, and with almost minuscule ownership, so lots of reasons to jump in on Harvey Barnes.
And one of the worries for me, I think, in defence is that Leicester haven't kept a clean sheet away from home yet this season, and 3 of their next 4 games are away from home. So I'm a little bit cautious on playing them and counting on points there. And then I think there are so many options at Leicester. Madison, Tielemans, there are lots of nice picks there.
Absolutely. Sam, your policy this week is to go big on Man City. Is that right?
Well, that's going to be my big decision is basically I want to get another superstar into the team. I've got Kane at the moment and Raheem Sterling, who have been doing the business.
Right.
But I want to get a De Bruyne or a Salah into the team.
I don't know what you hit with us. We just had a chat about how the big names really aren't performing. Your solution is I want to get another big name into
the
team.
Well, I've had a week where I've tried to have a bit of patience. Then I've had another week where I've been abysmal. And I just think now I've got too many expensive defenders. I'm going to get away from them, get the Sheffield United lads in, the Brighton lads potentially, and get De Bruyne he is my one. I want to get him into my side before this weekend against Aston Villa.
On average, how many transfers do you make a week, Sam?
Probably two, I would say.
Okay, all right, that's the average. Well, it's fair. For many people, like myself, that's the only pleasure you get from the game. You certainly don't get any at the other end of the weekend.
It makes you feel like a manager, doesn't it?
It does.
I'm going to get the winter coat.
All right, so you're looking to bring in Kevin De Bruyne, which I don't think anyone would argue with at this point, particularly when Man City are taking on an Aston Villa side who concede way more shots to opponents, at least so far in this Premier League season, than any other team in the division. You mentioned John McGinn at the start of this show. I just wonder what your take is on whether there's been a positional change for him. He hasn't been quite returning the way he had been, and some people have said that that might be to do with Dean Smith's tactics.
I think there's not a huge problem with him, especially away from home. I would probably bank on him being more of a threat this weekend than Grealish. Even though Grealish has adjusted his position to play closer to the striker, I think that Villa will be very much on the counter-attack, as you would expect. And McGinn's shooting from range. I think he's got the fourth most shots in the division behind three Manchester City players. And those driving, powerful runs, he could potentially get in that way. I think Grealish is better when they've got more of the ball,
right,
and they're building and they're playing a bit more possession. So I'd still have McGinn. I'd love to get Grealish in, but I think that comes after Manchester City and Liverpool.
Yeah, that's right, because the next couple of games really seem to argue against making any purchases from Aston Villa's squad. What about the big game of the weekend, Jeff, Liverpool-Spurs?
I think that is the big game of the weekend. There are so many of us who own two or three Liverpool players, and I think you have to play them if you have them. Alexander-Arnold, Van Dijk, Robertson, they're all great options. They have attacking threat, and they could keep a clean sheet. You never know. Mane and Salah, both now about 30% ownership, and they're both easy picks to play, but I don't know if I'd be bringing them in. And then on the other side, Kane and Son, yes, they are starting to get some form, but again, it's probably not the game that you would want to bring those players in. It's, if you have them, play them, but if you don't have them, probably wait a few weeks to bring them in.
Right. Do you think we're going to see a return to value from Spurs players after that win midweek? Tom, how convinced were you that they might be valuable assets in the future?
Yeah, I mean, it's the eternal frustration of being a fantasy manager when you've got players in your team who are involved in European football and you see them doing that midweek, knowing that the last few weeks in the Premier League they've been pretty hopeless.
Yeah, I mean, do you like seeing that because you think, well, brilliant, I haven't bought a total boob? Or do you think, crikey, that's their goal for the week?
Yeah, I suppose part of you thinks, well, they're in form, which is good because form is such a key factor in fantasy football. But then part of you thinks, well, you could have saved it for the weekend, mate. You know, I could have done with this potential 18-point haul last week. But yeah, I mean, you know, clearly you want your players to be playing well and to be scoring points. Spurs will struggle to translate that form to the game at Anfield, but much better to be going into a game like that with a bit of confidence, a bit of wind in the sails, than, you know, with their tails between their legs, which would have been the case if they'd gone in there straight from that pretty dismal performance against Watford last weekend.
Fair. Quick word, if we may, before we move on from the Game Week 10 fixtures, for Brighton-Everton. Brighton, who was so good 3 weeks ago when they last had their home game at the Amex against Spurs, 3-0, of course, that day. And Aaron Connolly really catching everybody's eyes. He started the following week as well. But there's another Brighton player who you're intrigued by, Sam.
There's a few, actually. Oh. But I think looking at the next two fixtures, Everton obviously at home and then Norwich at home, I think these are the exact type of games that Mopai has been brought in for and can make a difference in as well. I think they'll be tight games. It was 1-0 to Brighton last year against Everton, 1-1 the season before. They've got 1 point from their four away games, Everton, and have only scored once. So I think it's going to be ever so tight, probably a game of few chances. But I really think he can make the difference. And he's had 14 shots in the last four game weeks, which is the most out of any forward. So Mopai's a shout, but also the other end, I've had Matt Ryan, and he's been doing the business for me, the goalkeeper. And I think there's value in Dunk and Webster, who scored last time out against Aston Villa. He's only 4.4 million, 0.2% ownership. I think that surprise package that I had maybe in the early part of the season with the likes of Pukki, you could get that from Webster.
I like the look of Mope, actually. I think one of the things that I always look to is home games and away games, and do people perform differently in their home games and in away games? And Mope now, a goal in each of his last two home games, three of the next four at home. It's not just a pick for this week. He might be a pick for the next 3 or 4 weeks.
All right. Mopey look, as usual, I have by the end of each game week. But that's just me, listener. Hopefully it's going to be better. More long-term planning coming up now with The Long View. Longview, everybody, where we plan out a little bit further down the line our teams in terms of what clubs have coming up in their calendars. And there's a lot of green for Man United. Man United, who some say are back after their point. First team to make Liverpool drop points, of course. The point earned last week at Old Trafford. They've got good fixtures, haven't they, Jeff?
Yeah, Martial and Rashford look like they should start. They should be getting points. But for me, it's the defence more than anything. I'm not going to jump on them yet, but their defensive statistics look really nice. And the run of fixtures now goes up until, arguably, until Christmas. So potentially, United defence is a place to look.
Away at Norwich and then away at Bournemouth and then home to Brighton, away at Sheffield United, home to Aston Villa and Spurs. FPL Fridge, nice name, says, is Martial absolute madness?
I don't think he is. I think that once he comes back and if he starts, especially if he's starting up front in the middle of that front three, he's a nice pick. It's probably a little bit too early for me, but I'm a little bit risk averse. So if you want to get ahead of the curve, maybe he's the one to go for right now.
Tom, how are you on risks on Martial?
I think I'd want him to get, you know, back fully fit and firing again. I think a big plus point as far as he's concerned is the fact that he's down as a midfielder,
right,
where he's been playing through the centre for United this season as their number nine. So if he can get back into the team and in form and with that, you know, nice looking run of fixtures, he could be someone worth looking at.
That's definitely worth keeping an eye on, that Martial situation. You're not risk averse, are you, Sam? You live for it. And that's why you're looking at Watford for buying in. Once you finish with whatever high profile Kevin De Bruyne that you're doing this week, you want to go big on Hornets. They're bottom of the table, Sam.
There's a bit of a caveat to that. I think a lot hinges on this weekend against Bournemouth. And we know Bournemouth are very open, so there's likely to be goals in that game. I think if they can get a positive result in that one, I think the next few weeks, albeit they play Chelsea, there's some really good-looking fixtures. I was impressed with them against Tottenham. I think if he's going to persist with the five across the back, defensively they look a lot more solid. Cabaselli was exceptional. He's played in four matches and they haven't lost any. Ooh. He's conveniently missed the 8-0 at Manchester City. So I think he's a big player for them. And I think as well, going forward, Doucouré was back to his old self to a degree last weekend. And he's got a bit of protection with Cleverley and Chalobah in that midfield, which will allow him to get forward. So they're missing a bit of a threat at the top end of the pitch. But I think there's a couple of players there, certainly, who will be very cheap and could potentially get you some points in the weeks ahead.
Another Watford player worth looking at, potentially, Daryl Yamat. Only 4.3 million, 12 points last weekend against Spurs in that right wing-back role. Gets forward very well, has got a good cross on him. And with a slightly clearer fixture list in the next few weeks, and given how cheap he is, you know, might be worth bringing in.
I like the prices a lot. The worry for me is, are they going to score enough goals? Welbeck is out right now. Deeney's out. They will be back, though. And when they come back, when the team kind of has their full arsenal of options there, then maybe they're even a better option. But the fixtures do look like they're starting to turn a little bit.
And in the meantime, is it worth investing in defensive players like Cabaselli? Only 4.3 million. Jeff Doucouré, who plays a little bit further forward, but returned 9 points last weekend against Spurs, 5.7 million for him.
Potentially, I think so. And Cabaselli, yes, he's 4.3, but he's only owned by 0.2% of managers, which is very, very small. So if you get him in as maybe a fourth or fifth option in your defense, you play him when he's got a good fixture. That could be a nice differential, like we talked about before, to help you jump up the ranks a bit.
Excellent. Next up on the official FPL pod, we're going to be answering some of your questions. This week's Wednesday tweet from us here on the hashtag FPL pod was, which highly owned player do you think is not a strong FPL asset? Boy, there are some options here, aren't there? There were lots and lots of responses as well. J Swag Jerry says Van Dijk, to be honest, and Salah. Whew, throwing that out there, J Swag Jerry. Van Dijk, is he not a valuable option for the money?
I mean, he's one of the most high-scoring defenders. Mm-hmm. My preference with Liverpool defenders would be for one of the fullbacks, just because you are guaranteed, or you should be guaranteed, more attacking points from them. And because Liverpool have been so porous defensively this season, you can't depend on them so much for clean sheets, which means that, you know, you're much better off having defenders who offer something else. That may change a bit now that Alisson's back in the team and they're looking a little bit more solid at the back. But yeah, if it was a Liverpool defender, I'd go Trent or Andy Robertson over Van Dijk every time.
Or, as Rafik, another listener, suggests, Matip. Because he says Van Dijk, you can get the same points from Matip, and he's 1 or 1.5 million cheaper.
As long as Matip is starting, then that's true. The surprising thing with Van Dijk for me is that Robertson and Trent Alexander-Arnold, when you combine their percentage of ownership, is almost the same as Van Dijk. So Van Dijk is the most highly owned player in the game, which to me is quite surprising. I think it's probably because people had him from the beginning, haven't moved him on because he is a Liverpool defender, so it's kind of hard to move those players on sometimes.
Absolutely. Sam, you'll be interested by this one. Real says, highly owned player who's not a strong asset, Kane. And you've been so loyal.
I have been loyal. And Tom just spoke about, he's going to be reinvigorated for this weekend. There's two I had on my list. Van Dijk, we've already spoken about. He was kind of my fallback. He's the one that's I've been shouting at in the office this week. And the other one's Carl Walker.
Yeah.
But he's only 15.1%. Am I allowed that?
Yeah.
I've done a little bit of digging. I mean, he's one clean sheet and no assists since the opening day, 5.9 million for the 21 points that he's returned. And if you compare him to someone like Lucas Digne, similarly priced, he's creating a lot more, he's having more shots. Another one even cheaper, Van Aanholt, is doing more in the attacking third. That's what's holding me back at the moment, James. Carl Walker and Van Dijk this weekend.
I see. All right, just going to run through some more of your nominations for highly owned players who are not performing. Kushal says Aubameyang. That's a bit harsh, isn't it, Jeff?
A little bit, but he's missed two game weeks in a row now without attacking returns. He had 7 game weeks before that where he did have them. It's those really high-priced players that it's difficult to hold them when they're not performing. Aubameyang, Kane, Aguero. If they're in and out of the team or if they're performing and then not performing and you can't trust them for captaincy, it is difficult to hold them when people like Abraham, Pukki are performing well at a much lower price.
Okay, Ash and Ash suggests Dean for this category, and Seven Amadov has Mount and Abraham as highly owned players who are not strong assets. That's really flying in the face of a lot of conventional wisdom because so many managers of late have piled in on those last two Chelsea players.
Yeah, I would disagree with that quite emphatically. I've had Tammy Abraham in since week 2 or week 3 and he's scored very consistently. Mason Mount as well, who, you know, has been getting picked ahead of Ross Barkley and other more seasoned players and you know, who fulfills a very attacking role in that Chelsea team. My highly owned player who's not delivering is Timo Pukki. And I think this week is going to be the week that I give him the chop. 4 games now without scoring after that blistering start to the season. He's shown that he can score at Premier League level. And I imagine at some point he will start finding the net again. But my patience has finally run out. 34.1% ownership. So over a third of every FPL team has got him. Meaning over a third of every FPL team has been watching his diminishing returns over the last few weeks and tearing their hair out. So he's up for the chop this week.
Week by week, he has been one of the most highly sold players, and yet he still retains that massive 30% ownership in the population.
Well, it's because every season you get, like, you know, a few cheapy strikers who prove to be better than their price suggests, and you tend to think as an FPL manager, well, if I get one of those in early, then I can just leave him there for the rest of the season. And that appeared to be the player that Pukki was going to be this season. Maybe he will become that player again, but for the time being, and with Manchester United on their way to Carrow Road this weekend, he's on his way out.
I see. All right. Well, from high ownership but low returning players, we go next to quite the opposite, the essential differentials. Well, Sam Goose's point at the start of the show about how all but David Silva of this week's dream team were differentials really underlines the importance of not following the herd, thinking for yourself, like Sam here. But, you know, maybe a bit better. And picking players who nobody else is going to be able to enjoy the returns from. Tom, who have you earmarked as a potential acquisition on that front?
Well, given that I want to get rid of Timo Pukki, there's a vacancy that will be opening up in my forward line. And I'm thinking about maybe bringing in Raul Jimenez of Wolves.
9.9%, so he just scraped under the 10% limit.
Under the differential limbo bar. Hmm. Made a slow start to the season, like Wolves did, but has picked up in the last few weeks. 10 and 7 points in each of the last two game weeks was a key figure in Wolves' win at City before the international break. And then was on target again in the draw against Southampton last weekend. Could have ended up with a hat-trick were it not for VAR. So he's looking in good form. And then Wolves fixture-wise, away at Newcastle, home to Aston Villa and away at Bournemouth coming up in the next few weeks. So a decent set of fixtures. And he's starting to look back to his best.
Good. Sam, were you looking at Allaire as a player to acquire?
Yeah, I think he carries a big threat for West Ham. I've been impressed with him. Involved in 5 goals in his 8 starts so far. Highest point scorer at the club.
He's returned reasonably in 2 of the last 3 game weeks as well.
Yeah, and he's done the business in the home games against Norwich and Palace and against Watford away. And they've got Sheffield United at home, followed by Newcastle at home, Burnley away. He's not got any points or done particularly well against the 2 big Manchester clubs, but I think against the teams around them, I think he could be a high point scorer.
Right, and he won't cost you much. 7.4 million, 5% ownership at the moment, so very much qualifies as a differential. FPL Prince writing in saying, some people call Pepe a waste of money for costing 72 million. They should see my fantasy football team, says FPL Prince. They cost 100 million and none of them can score either. Pepe, though, Jeff, are you about to suggest that he might be a good player to bring in?
He's the kind of player, when you watch him, you're frustrated because he's not getting the returns that you think he should get. He's missing chances that he shouldn't be missing as an FPL manager. We might think that, but when you actually look at what he's returning, he does have returns in 3 straight home games. 3 of Arsenal's next 4 games are at home. He is 9.3 million, so it's a lot of money to put out there. But with only 3.4% ownership, he's the kind of player who, if you get him in for those home games and he keeps performing at that rate, then he can really push you up.
If you were looking for a low ownership attacking option at Arsenal, would Lacazette be a better bet?
Potentially. For me, I want to kind of see how he beds in a little bit. So because he's been out and he's coming back in, Arsenal, yes, they're not in the best of form. So I do think Lacazette will get starts. But for me, as a forward, I want to wait a little bit longer on Lacazette over Pepe, who at least has been playing.
Okay. You also mentioned that Alisson, thanks to that long injury, has got really low ownership at the moment. Is it worth investing that much in a goalkeeper, though?
Potentially. We'll see how the clean sheets play out. So it seems often at the beginning of the season that teams are kind of figuring out where they are, trying to figure out their defence a little bit. With Alisson back, I expect clean sheets more often for the whole Liverpool defence. So if you own Liverpool defenders, that's good all around. And the fixtures aren't great for Liverpool over the next 3. But after the fixtures turn, he is 5.8 million now, 6.4% ownership. He would be a great pick if you want just one strong keeper, no rotation, just play him every week.
Brilliant. Excellent. All right, well, in a second or two, we'll be having a look at which transfers everyone's thinking of making ahead of game week 10 and also who gets to wear their armband. Listener, if you need extra help building your team ahead of this game week, do make sure to check out the FPL show and FPL FYI on PremierLeague.com. Now, what's everyone planning to do ahead of Friday evening at 7? Sam, you mentioned Kevin De Bruyne. Anything else?
Well, it might have to be a wild card, yeah, because
really?
I'm going to try and keep the firepower up top with Kane or someone similar ilk. Sterling's going to remain for this weekend, so I'm going to try and get Kevin De Bruyne into my midfield, but it's going to mean taking out my really expensive defenders who I just don't think are value for money at the moment.
How many transfers will you have to make to bring De Bruyne in?
I would say it would probably be 3 minimum.
Oh, yeah. So you're looking at maybe just playing the wild card and getting it over and done with.
Absolutely.
I have to tell you, though, you've not got long because it's Friday evening at 7. You've got to get it sorted. Did you already have an idea, a dream team of who you want to bring in?
Yeah, I think some of the names that have cropped up already today, the likes of Harvey Barnes, certainly the Sheffield United, Lundstrom's. That's the kind of thing I'm thinking, just to get the money available to get De Bruyne into the midfield. And it may have to be, if I can't afford to keep Kane, it may have to be one of the alternatives like a Vardy or a Allaire.
Right. I think they're great alternatives to Harry, with all due respect. OK, we'll hear your captain's pick in a second or two, but Tom, transfers this week?
Yeah, I'm conflicted. I would like to get rid of Damo Bucci and replace him with Jamie Vardy, but to do that, I'm going to need to make about 3 transfers. What? I've got 2 free transfers this week that I could use, but I'm still weighing things up, and I'm wondering whether I might have actually talked myself into bringing in Jimenez instead of Vardy for Bucci, who is a bit more affordable and would involve a great deal less upheaval.
Do it, Tom. Nothing can go wrong. Jeff?
I'm also conflicted. I have 1 free transfer and I'll probably just save it. I look at Pukki and I think that he probably has 1 more game to show me that he should be in my team still. Yes, it's 4 games in a row with no attacking returns, but some of them have been away games and he's a much better home form player. So home to United, and then I think it's home, 1 more home game in the next 2. If he performs well this week, I'll hold him. I'll probably roll my transfer this week, though.
Right, I'm going to roll my transfer as well after I had an 8-point hit and still came away with 30 points for the game week. So, hey, but what about the captain's armband, Sam?
Always worried after Champions League week what Pep Guardiola is going to do in particular, but I just feel he's got to play Sterling on the back of his hat-trick. So I'm going to stick with Raheem Sterling, probably just over Kevin De Bruyne.
Do you think it's possible to predict in any way Pep's thinking?
No.
Right. He's only left them out once,
okay,
but that was for the 8-0 against Watford.
Wow.
So they succeeded in his absence.
That's certainly true. All right, well, I mean, it does make total sense to everybody else but Pep, but he's got to play. He's got to play, and he makes an inviting captain candidate against Aston Villa. All right. Tom, what about you?
I'm going to go Man City. I'm going to go Kevin De Bruyne. Mm. I also have Raheem Sterling. Didn't captain him last week, so missed out on the assist points he got at Crystal Palace. But, De Bruyne is in such sensational form. I expect that City will score a few goals, and if they do, De Bruyne is generally involved.
Certainly is. Is it Man City for you as well, Jeff?
It is, but I don't think I'll break the tie. I can't decide between Sterling and De Bruyne. I'll pick one of them, but I just can't. I can't decide at this point. So it it'll be right down to the deadline on Friday when I decide. I think De Bruyne's home form is great. De Bruyne's league form is great, but then that showing in midweek by Sterling, I don't know.
Right. Who knows what Pep has in his plans for us all? It's always interesting seeing his team sheet, isn't it? Best of luck to you all. And you too, listener, with Game Week 10. Let's hope it's a little bit more free scoring than the last two rounds have been for managers. Many thanks to Jeff, Tom and Sam for being with us. And we'll be back with another edition of the show next week. So hopefully we'll see you then.